Welcome to Walter's, where our 24 self-pour beer wall awaits. Ask your server for a beer card and hit the beer wall. Pay by the ounce and try a few suds before you settle on your favorite.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Second baseman at shortstop, Shady, the middle of the pitch. Swing and a line drive. Base hit into right field. Nassim Nunez scores. Young speeding around second. He goes to third. The game is tied and the winning run is 90 feet away. And C.J. Abrams comes through in the clutch. It's bedlam in the nation's capital. We're all even here in the bottom of the ninth. The Nationals 3 and the Orioles 3. Harvey's coming set. And the pitch swung on it high in the air to deep left field. Back goes Winker at the warning track at the wall, and it is gone. Goodbye into the Orioles bullpen. A two-run shot with one out of the 11th inning, and the Orioles back in front 5-3. Runners lead second and third. No balls, two strikes. Here's the pitch. Swing and a fly ball right field toward the line. Not deep. In comes McKenna. He makes the catch. Runner tags. Going to try and score. Here's the throw to the plate. He is safe! Rosario to the backside with a left hand in again. Ahead of the tag of Rutschman. And the Nationals have done it again. It's a sacrifice fly and a run batted in for Jacob Young. And we are tied again.
Now the set and the 0-1. And the dirt gets by, and here comes Mateo, and he will score. 7-5 Baltimore, wild pitch. There goes Garcia for third. The pitch is hit in the air to right field deep. McKenna going back. He's got a play. He makes the catch shy of the warning track. Meneses spikes his helmet in disgust, and the Orioles win the ball game 7-6.
And welcome to Nats Chat for Thursday, May 9th, 2024. Along with MassinSports.com, Nationals insider Mark Zuckerman, who is at Nationals Park. I'm Al Galdi, host of the Al Galdi podcast. What a game at Nationals Park on Wednesday evening. The Nats did lose a 7-6, a 12-inning loss to the Orioles in Game 2 of a two-game series. The Nats, for this regular season now, are back at 500 at 18-18. But this game was a battle. The Nats overcame a 3-1 ninth-inning deficit and a 5-3 11th-inning deficit, and then scored a run in the bottom of the 12th. The Nats in this game scored 6 runs, 5 of which came from the 9th through 12th innings. This episode of the Nats Chat podcast is brought to us by Walter's Sports Bar, located across the street from Nationals Park. Visit waltersdc.com for more information. Mark, 9 of the game's 13 runs were scored over the 9th through 12th innings. Each team used a total of 8 pitchers. In the many games that we have had via these Battle of the Beltways, this really was a memorable one.
Someone up in the press box, as we got to, I think, the 12th inning, had a good observation. They said, somebody at the Masson Command Center is sitting there with their finger over two buttons and just waiting to see, is this ultimately going to be a Nationals classic or an Orioles classic that they'll be replaying for years? I think you could make the case. Obviously, the Orioles won it, so I guess it goes down as an Orioles classic. But I'll tell you what, this was right up there with some of the most impressive games we've seen from the Nationals, certainly in the last several years. And yeah, they lost it, but in a weird way, I think they come out of this game feeling better about themselves than the Orioles do. There was a lot of optimism in that home clubhouse after this game. They wish they won the game, yes, but they feel like they made a statement in this one and over the last two nights, and they think they're for real. And you know what? Good for them for feeling that way. The more they play games like this, the more they're going to feel that way, and deservedly so.
It was really impressive the way that the Nats kept fighting in this game. I know that that's a cliche, but it is true. The boys did battle in this game and on multiple occasions. Like I said, five of the Nats' six runs coming from the 9th through 12th innings. The Nats in this game, 9 hits, which were a home run, 2 doubles, and 6 singles. 7 walks as the Nats continue to be so much better at drawing walks this season as compared to last season. The big complaint would be that the Nats went just 4-for-21 with runners in scoring position. One of the many oddities about this game, the Nats in the game had 21 at-bats with runners in scoring position to the Orioles' 6 at-bats with runners in scoring position. And yet the Nats lost the game. But there was so much to like from the Nats in this game. A lot of ways you can sort of attack what went down. Some of the big hits in this game by the Nats: C.J. Abrams, he only went 1-for-5 as the Nats starting shortstop and number 2 batter, but the one was a huge game-tying RBI single. He also drew a hit-by-pitch, but Abrams in the Nats, a 2-run 9th inning, game-tying 2-out RBI single to right field off O's reliever Keegan Aiken to tie the game at 3. Eddie Rosario, I mean, this guy had been in a massive rut, as we all know. He's now hot. Rosario as the Nats starting right fielder and number 8 batter, 2-for-4 with a solo homer, a single, and a walk. Rosario in that Nats 2-run 9th, a 2-out solo homer to right center field off Orioles closer Craig Kimbrell, who is a mess right now, to cut the Nats deficit to 3-2. The homer going a projected 416 feet per Statcast. And Rosario in the Nats 2-run 11th, a 1-out walk despite having been down at 1.02. What a plate appearance that was by him. Ildemaro Vargas off the bench to play third base, 1-for-1 with a big RBI double. Vargas in the Nats 2-run 11th, a 1-out opposite field RBI ground rule double off the left field warning track to cut the Nats deficit to 5-4. Luis Garcia Jr., he is the Nats starting second baseman, number 3 batter, only went 1-for-6, but the 1 an RBI double. Garcia in that Nats 1-run 12th, a leadoff RBI double to deep right field to cut the Nats deficit to 7-6. The Nats would not go away in this game, scored the 2 runs in the bottom of the 9th to tie the game, gave up 2 Orioles runs in the top of the 11th, then responded with 2 runs in the bottom of the 11th, gave up 2 more Orioles runs in the top of the 12th, then responded with that run in the bottom of the 12th. This game never felt over. I'm still not even sure that this game is over.
I'm not sure it is either. Honestly, I wouldn't mind if the series was continuing. I think it's a shame it was only 2 games. I would love to come back here on Thursday for the rubber match. I don't know if the teams feel like they have enough pitching left to go through that. The Nats are already on their way to Boston as we record this. But man, there was so much to like about that. And yet you kept feeling like they're one hit away from winning that game if just somewhere along the way they had done that. You mentioned all the at-bats and runs from scoring position. They had 9 of them in the first 4 innings, and then none of them for the next 4 innings. And then they finished the night with 21. So that's 12 at-bats with runners in scoring position in the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th innings. Now I get it. In extra innings, you already have the runner in scoring position, the automatic runner. But my God, there were so many chances there. They did what they needed to keep extending the game. They just couldn't quite pull it off. But I kept thinking to myself, they're going to do this. Somebody's going to find a way to do this. Such good stuff there. I want to mention Eddie Rosario here real quick. You said it, how hot he's been. You know, at the end of April, we're all talking about how this guy is in the worst slump of his career, looks awful. We said, yeah, he's always been a slow starter, but this is beyond anything he had ever done before. At the end of April, he's batting 0.53, slugging 0.70 with a 1.85 OPS. And everybody kept saying, well, he gets hot once the calendar turns. All right, you know what he is in May now and so far through 6 games? He's batting 3.75 with a 1.224 OPS. So maybe, just maybe, the switch of the calendar turns it on for Eddie Rosario, and what a help that would be for this team if he could keep that up.
Well, George Steinbrenner many years ago called Dave Winfield Mr. May in a negative way. Maybe Eddie Rosario was Mr. May in a positive way. Great to see that. And, you know, I was thinking about Craig Kimbrell as the Nats were teeing off on him in that 9th inning. Craig Kimbrell, of course, is a guy who Nats fans have come to know over the years, given his time with the Braves and the Phillies. He's now in his age 36 season. He's not what he was, although he had been doing really well this season. He's really in a rut now. He struggled in 4 of his last five appearances. But to see the Nats essentially bully Kimbrel in that ninth inning, off him retiring each of the first two Nats batters he faced, there was this like momentum. I know momentum is one of these things, you know, it's hard to sort of define, and I think it's debatable whether it even exists, to be honest with you. But Rosario hits that home run, and everything changed after that, because the Nats were down to their last out. Rosario comes through with the homer, and then Trey Lipscomb walk, Jacob Young walk, Kimbrel out, Keegan Aiken in, Aiken throws a wild pitch. Now you're really feeling like the juju is on the Nats' side, and then Abrams comes through with that RBI single. That was like 2019 Nationals-esque, what they did in that ninth inning against Kimbrel.
You know, the word I would use for it, you call it momentum, and I get why there'd be a question of whether that's really a thing or not. Here's the word I would use for it: confidence. I think that's a real thing. You start to have success. You see that your team is doing this against a guy who looks a little shaky out there, no matter what his career resume may be. And that kind of confidence permeates the entire dugout. I think that's legit. We talked about this all the time in 19, and I think you're starting to see it as an identity of this team. When you have a team that shows it can come from behind to win games, and certainly the Nats have done that, it breeds confidence in yourself so that when the situation arises again, you're not worried about it. You actually feel like you have the upper hand. And yes, even when they're trailing in the ninth inning and facing a potential Hall of Fame closer, as soon as Rosario hits that ball out, you're thinking to yourself, yeah, they could pull this off because they've done it before. So I think it's confidence that comes with the more that you do this, and good on them for following through with it. And, you know, I've seen Craig Kimbrel enough over the years to know two things. One, when he's on, he's incredible. And two, when he's off, you can kind of tell, and it's usually a disaster. He does not pitch his way out of self-inflicted jams. When it goes south, it keeps going south. And I thought it was fascinating, you know, this is for an Orioles podcast that we don't do, but I thought it was fascinating how Brandon Hyde didn't hesitate to pull him and bring in the lefty to face CJ Abrams, a move that backfired actually against him.
It didn't work. I don't blame Hyde one bit for that. Like I said, Kimbrel, if you've been following this, Kimbrel has really been bad lately. I don't know that Hyde had much choice. I also had this thought. So if you had to identify the series that really marked the end of that Nats run, 2012 through 2019, the Nats needing to engage in a rebuild, it was the Nats getting swept in a three-game series at the Orioles, July 23rd through July 25th, 2021. That was the series that I think made it apparent to just about everyone that this was done and the Nats needed to be sellers. And sure enough, they were sellers after that. So to me, there's almost like a poetry here, because that series marked the end of the Nats' last good run. And maybe we look back on this two-game series as marking the beginning of something. Now, it's a two-game split, right? So we're not going to go crazy over that. But the Nats get to having a winning regular season record for the first time since that month of July 2021. You have this really good extra inning loss in game two of the series. And maybe, just maybe, we look back upon this series for the Nats against the O's as the start of something, off that three-game sweep at the O's in July of 21 being the end of something.
I like your thinking there. I think internally, they're looking at this as a big series for them. And yeah, they split it. But this was like as upbeat as you're ever going to see a team after they take a loss in a game. And, you know, it's May 8th, and the outcome of this one game isn't going to matter that much in the bigger picture. If you play that same game in September and you're in a pennant race, you're crushed by it to lose like that. But for right now, for where they are in their development and at this point in the season, I think it's perfectly fine to come out of that feeling good about yourself. And if it does turn into something that propels them and even something more, I think that's fantastic. You know, coming into this, we were saying, okay, they swept the Marlins. They did well against the Dodgers out west, but then got swept by them here. They beat the Astros, but the Astros are not playing real well right now. They beat the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays are not playing real well right now. It sort of felt like, okay, this is a real test for them, these two games against a team that is clearly one of the best in baseball. And for them to come out of it in as good a shape as they did, again, I think that breeds confidence and it makes them feel like they are legit. I think these two nights said to a lot of people, you know, whatever fans might think of it, I think internally within that clubhouse, they come out of this feeling a lot better about themselves. They think they are legitimate.
Hey guys, it's Al Galdi for Window Nation, which has another great deal for listeners of the Nats Chat podcast. 50% off all window styles, plus 0% interest for 5 years, and an additional bonus if you schedule an appointment this week. This offer is good throughout this month of May. Window Nation windows are the best. Increase the value, look, and feel of your home. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com and tell Window Nation that you want the deal that you heard about from Al Galdi on the Nats Chat podcast. Window Nation can install your new windows in a day or less. Window Nation's windows come with a lifetime warranty. Get a free, no obligation quote now. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com. That's 866-90-NATION or windownation.com and tell Window Nation that Al Galdi sent you.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Here's your Dylan Cruz update for the game played on Wednesday. Cruz went 0-for-3 with a walk while playing center field in Harrisburg's 4-0 loss in Manchester, New Hampshire. Brady House, by the way, 0-for-2 while drawing 2 walks. His OPS is at .828 this season. Plenty more on James Wood later on in the podcast. Now back to the show.
That's trying to break out on top here in the bottom of the second, as they did last night. Here's the set of the pitch. Swing a ground ball toward the middle. That's going to go through into center field, a base hit. Nationals will take the lead first. Manessis around third, coming home. He scores on a single up the middle for Trey Lipscomb, driving in his 6th run of the year. Stopping at second is Keibert Ruiz.
He lost a lot of weight, you know, so he's working, you know, he's really working his way back. The only way he's going to get his timing is by, you know, going out there and playing. I mean, he's got to play. So the one thing that's good about it, yeah, he wants to contribute, but he's taking it about as best as you could take it. You know, he wants to really do well.
I do want to note this, too, with the Nats offense. So he didn't end up being a major factor in this game, but Keibert Ruiz on Wednesday evening as the Nats starting catcher and number 7 batter, 2-for-5 with 2 singles and some pretty good plate appearances here. He and the Nats, 1 run second, had a single to center field despite having been down at 1.12. Keibert in the bottom of the 4th, a leadoff full count single to right field. He is continuing to play. Now, he has been dropped down in the lineup. He was the Nats' number 7 batter in each game in this series, but we did not see Riley Adams start a game in this series. And I thought it was interesting what Davey Martinez had to say about Keibert Ruiz during Davey's pregame press conference with you guys. We know what the deal has been here. Keibert has been struggling something fierce. Good to see him get a few hits on Wednesday evening. And it sounds like we're going to continue to see him and that Davey is going to allow for Keibert to play his way out of this slump.
Yeah, look, it was 3-for-51 coming into this game. That's just a staggering number. And it started before he even went on the IL and obviously continued since he came off it. 2 singles and 2 lineouts in this game. So those were good at-bats, good contact that he made. And Davey's argument of why he keeps playing him as much as he is, said, you know, as long as he's physically up for it, and he believes that Keibert is physically up for it, Davey feels like the only way you get yourself out of that kind of slump is to keep seeing pitches, to keep playing and get your timing down. And then one night it all clicks and you're back feeling good about yourself again. Maybe this was the night that started that for him. We'll have to wait and see. In Davey's mind, Gilbert Ruiz is so important to this team. He's not losing his starting job. They have committed to him as the number one catcher. And let's be clear, Riley Adams, who did a great job when Ruiz was on the IL, has really cooled off since then. So it's not like there's a guarantee he would step in and do any better. But right now, even if it meant taking some bad at-bats and potentially hurting yourself in the course of a game you're trying to win, the feeling was that in the bigger picture, they are better off playing Gilbert Ruiz and giving him every opportunity to snap out of this because they need him to. They can't afford for him not to figure this out.
The underrated bright spot from this Nats 7-6 12 inning loss to the Orioles on Wednesday evening has to be the Nats starting pitcher, Mitchell Parker. I feel like his performance almost gets forgotten with everything that happened as the game went on. But Mitchell Parker, again, was good. Two runs in 5 2/3 innings, you know, facing this fearsome home run happy Orioles lineup. He did give up two solo homers, but he only gave up a total of 5 hits, the 2 solo homers, a double, and 2 singles. He issued 1 walk. He recorded 3 strikeouts. He threw a lot of strikes, 77 pitches, 53 strikes, versus just 24 balls. More and more, that is a phrase that we are saying with national starting pitchers. He threw a lot of strikes. That Mike Rizzo mantra of, I don't care how fast you throw ball four, that seems to have been taken to heart because it seems like Nats pitchers are doing a much better job this season of throwing strikes. And you take a step back and you look at Mitchell Parker. It was on April 15th that the Nats announced having recalled Parker from AAA Rochester. He since then, over 5 major league starts, has an ERA at 2.67 and a whip of 1.07. Now, the workload is low, 27 innings over the 5 starts, but all things considered, how do you not love what the Nats are getting from Mitchell Parker?
No, it's been fantastic. Now, look, he had not given up a home run in the big leagues in 4 starts, and you can't expect that to last forever. And this is a good lineup, a lineup that hits home runs, as we know. So I don't think it was a surprise that that necessarily happened to him. But he was able to minimize it, and that's great. 2 solo homers, that's not going to kill you. He made it into the 6th inning. He got to face the top of the lineup 3 times and got a couple more outs. Absolutely good for him. And it speaks to a larger thing that I kind of hadn't really thought about. And I looked it up during the game and realized this was the case. Coming into the day, Nationals pitchers had given up the fewest homers in the majors this year. And that's not the case anymore because they gave up the 3 in this one. But think about that. Last year, they gave up 245 most in the majors. This year, at least coming into this game, they'd given up the fewest home runs in the majors. That is a staggering turnaround and such a big part of what they're doing. And you mentioned the walks, and I just looked that this one up. They are tied for 11th fewest walks in the major leagues at 114. So not great, but certainly an improvement over what we have seen from them in the past. You throw strikes and you keep the ball in the yard, it gives you a chance all the time. And they have done that, not just Mitchell Parker, but as a pitching staff, they've really done a good job of that.
Makes up for a lot because I don't know that we're necessarily seeing more strikeouts from that starting pitchers. I'd have to look at the numbers on that, but it certainly doesn't feel like, you know, this all of a sudden has become this great strikeout generating staff. But yeah, the lack of home runs given up has been terrific to see. And these guys are throwing strikes and the Nats are getting good starting pitching. It feels like game in, game out. You're not necessarily getting length, but that's the way that things are now in MLB. You're getting some good run prevention from these guys. Well, thank goodness the Nats do have an off day on Thursday because the bullpen got work in this 7-6 12 inning loss to the O's on Wednesday evening. It ended up that the only reliever left for Davey Martinez to use was Tanner Rainey. Everyone else ended up being used in this game. 7 Nats relievers combined to allow 5 runs, 2 earned in 6 2/3 innings. Derek Law was charged with a run in 2/3 of an inning. He faced 3 batters, got 2 outs. Robert Garcia faced 3 batters, got 2 outs. Jacob Barnes tossed a scoreless top of the 8th. Dylan Floro was excellent. A perfect top of the 9th with 3 swinging strikeouts. Kyle Finnegan was great again. A scoreless and hitless top of the 10th. Hunter Harvey in the top of the 11th allowed 2 runs, 1 earned. He gave up a one-out first pitch, 2-run homer by Ryan Mountcastle to left field for a 5-3 Orioles lead. Harvey and Mountcastle, many of you probably know this, they're like really good friends. Mountcastle was in Harvey's wedding, in fact. And then things got a bit sloppy in the top of the 12th. Jordan Weems allowed 2 runs as he gave up a leadoff RBI single by Jorge Mateo to left field for a 6-5 Orioles lead. And Mateo on the play advanced to second base on a fielding error by third baseman Ildemar Vargas, and then on the play advanced to third base on a throwing error by Weems, and then Mateo scored on a wild pitch by Weems for a 7-5 Orioles lead. So things were going well for the bullpen until Harvey gave up the two-run homer by Mountcastle. And then, as mentioned, things got a bit sloppy with Weems in the top of the 12th.
The Mountcastle homer off Harvey, like you said, they're best friends. And they'd only faced each other once before in September of 2022. And Mountcastle homered off him in that game and has never let him hear the end of it since then. And now he's got even more ammo against Hunter Harvey, at least until they face each other again. The surprising thing about this one, it was a first pitch splitter. Not a terrible pitch. It was up a little bit in the zone, maybe not exactly where Harvey wanted it. But he said his reaction to it was, I cannot believe he just did that. Like, was he sitting on that pitch? Is he looking for a first pitch splitter? Maybe a guy who knows him as well as he does thinks, yeah, he's going to try to fool me with that. And when that's a tough luck home run, I think, to give up for Harvey, who otherwise has been really, really good for them for a while now. Finnegan, this is now 11 consecutive hitless innings for him. He has thrown more than the equivalent of a no-hitter over 11 appearances without giving up a hit. There's been, I think, three walks in there. Good on him. It's been fantastic. Weems, by the time you get to the 12th, you're down to whatever you have. At that point, that's the problem with these games that go this deep. He turned it into a disaster. It's one thing to give up the hit. It's another to then start throwing the ball away. And he said he just picked up the ball, had a terrible grip on it, and he sailed it, probably the worst throw he's ever made. In hindsight, he says he wished he had just held on to it, not even attempted to make the throw. But then the wild pitch beyond that, it's unfortunate. You know, it's a lot to ask a bullpen to be so good to get through all those innings with a runner in scoring position. Once you get to extra innings, there is, you know, no breathing room at all. So I do feel for those guys in those spots, but Weems couldn't quite get it done. And that was a tough one. And this game continued. We were probably going to see Tanner Rainey with the game on the line, and who knows how that would have gone. And if it went beyond that, I don't know who else is there at that point. Would Patrick Corbin have come out of the bullpen instead of starting on Friday? I don't know what would have happened there.
Not to sound alarmist, but I do want to note this. So 36 games now for the Nats in this regular season. Hunter Harvey has pitched in half of them. He's pitched in 18 of them. Derek Law has pitched in more than half of them, 19 of them. Kyle Finnegan, Dylan Floro, Jordan Weems each has pitched in 17 of the 36 games. Those are heavy workloads. And look, it's a 12-inning game. What are you going to do? Like, not pitch people? Like, you have to pitch people. I get that. But do you think the workloads for these relievers, who overall are doing well, is a concern?
A little bit, because what are the odds that all of them can keep this up all year long, both in terms of effectiveness and in terms of health? And this is where they are in a tough spot. We talked about it the other night with the Matt Barnes DFA. Of their relievers they have on the major league roster, only two of them have minor league options, and that's Finnegan and Harvey, and they're not going to do that. They're not sending those guys down to the minors. Most teams, you have the ability to move guys up and down and have a little bit of a rotation with 9 or 10 relievers when you need a fresh arm. Sometimes somebody gets sent down even though they haven't pitched that poorly, but just to give them a little bit of a break and to get somebody else up here who can give you a few innings when you need it. They don't really have the ability to do that without getting rid of somebody altogether or placing them on waivers or, you know, potentially on the IL. So I do worry that that's going to come up at some point this summer where they're going to be out of fresh arms and have to make a tough decision. You hope it doesn't involve injuries along the way. It could. Bullpens are funny things. Relievers are funny things. You can look great for a while and then you can look awful very quickly. And when that happens, are they in a position to account for that, especially if they are playing competitive baseball and can't afford, you know, to be losing games because of tired or, you know, insufficient bullpens?
We all know Hunter Harvey's injury history, and I think the Nats deserve a lot of credit for getting what they've gotten out of Hunter Harvey. But, I mean, you look at his season, he's on pace to make 81 appearances. He's on pace to throw 80-plus innings. God bless him if he can do that, but his injury history screams, you're really taking a chance in having him on pace to do that. So we'll see what happens with that. He continues to be utilized. He continues to be really effective. But man, that is quite the workload that he and others are shouldering so far this season.
This homestand is over, and the next one begins on May 20th. For a 3-game series against the Twins, followed by 3 more versus Seattle. Check out Game Time for various ticketing options, as there are tickets as low as $3 at the moment when they play Minnesota. Game Time offers the lowest price guarantee, or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Take the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code NATSCHAT for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code NATSCHAT for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Line shot out to center field. Allen chasing it back, looking up, and it bounces off of the berm. James Wood, second home run of the game. And the Rochester Red Wings take a 3-2 lead, all off the bat of the Nationals' number two prospect.
I say this all the time, I'm really excited about our future, really. I mean, when these guys all come up and they're playing the way we think they're capable of playing, you think we're exciting now? I said, we're going to be really exciting. Yeah.
Big game for the Nats' top prospect on Wednesday, outfielder James Wood. So Wood, in the Baseball America latest list of the top 100 prospects in baseball, is the Nats' number one prospect. The list came out last Thursday, May 2nd. Wood ranked as the number 5 overall prospect in baseball. And Wood, for the AAA Rochester Red Wings in a 5-3 loss at the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders on Wednesday, as the Red Wings starting center fielder and number 2 batter, 2-for-3, 2 home runs, and a walk. James Wood got off to a hot start, cooled off a bit, but look, his OPS for this season for Rochester now is at 973. Now, it's interesting, he had only hit 2 home runs coming into Wednesday this season, hits the 2 on Wednesday, so now it's 4. He had had this high slugging percentage despite not having homered all that much, which I found kind of fascinating. But I wanted to comment on what Davey Martinez said to you guys during his pregame presser on Wednesday afternoon about James Wood. Because obviously, you have Wood, uber prospect. The Nats this season, given their many injuries to outfielders, have had ample opportunity to call up Wood, have not. And I have to say, as this has gone on, I have really come to respect this from the Nats. They have a process. They are sticking to that process, and they're not letting anything in terms of outfielder injuries or outfielder struggles at the major league level make the team waver from that process. And I think that there is a discipline being displayed here, a commitment to the process being displayed here that is to be admired. And Davey Martinez really verbalized that to you guys in his pregame presser.
I read all the reports, and I don't really watch. I try not to watch the games per se. I don't want to get caught up in the whole, because, like I said, you can become a fan, right? I mean, you want all these kids to do well, and you want to see them come up here. But I got 26 guys up here I got to worry about, so that's my biggest focus right now.
Who knows when Wood will be called up? It sure seems like it's going to happen relatively soon, but does that mean in a week or in a month? We don't know. And Davey used a line along the lines of, you know, I don't want to be a fan. We can't be fans. We have to be like adults here. We have to be responsible here. And he's right about that. This isn't about doing what, you know, people on Twitter want you to do. This is about doing what's in the best interest of the prospect and of the organization. And so I want to salute the Nats for this. They're sticking to their process. Wood is doing really well, but he's going to come up when the Nats deem him ready to be called up.
I love that line from Davey about, you know, being a fan. And he acknowledged, like, if I was a fan, I would probably be itching to get him up here. But we do have to stick with this. And it's not just about numbers. It's about what they see, what their people who are there every day see from James Wood. He did mention things about how he's hitting against left-handed pitching, which has not been great so far. He mentioned his strikeout rate, which is 33%, which in today's game is not the worst thing in the world, but you wouldn't mind that getting, you know, at least a little bit better. He's hitting a lot of ground balls. And just there's a lot of little things that you learn in the minor leagues. Remember, James Wood, I think, is still 21 and has not played a ton in the minor leagues. Certainly, this is his first time at AAA. And it's okay to give guys time to develop at their own pace and learn how to play the game right. We mentioned the other day with the Orioles and Jackson Holliday, they called him up kind of under some pressure to do so. And it didn't work out, and they sent him back down. Who knows what that means for them in the long run? I think it's also fascinating, on the same day we're talking about James Wood, the Pirates announced that Paul Skeens is making his major league debut on Saturday against the Cubs. Different, you know, story, different situation, but it's interesting that Paul Skeens and Wyatt Langford are in the big leagues now, and Dylan Cruz is still at Double A. But again, everybody moves at their own pace, and I do give the Nats some credit for saying they're going to do this when they believe those players are ready. I really don't think there are other factors at play. This isn't about service time. This isn't about manipulating anything. This is about them calling up these guys when they truly believe they are ready and putting them in the best position to succeed. Because if you bring them up and they don't succeed, it only makes it harder in the long term. And I think that's what their motivation is right now.
I really do think that the Jackson Holliday situation is instructive. Consensus number one prospect in baseball was doing really well for AAA Norfolk. Mike Elias got killed by both Orioles fans and Orioles media members for not beginning the regular season with Holliday at the major league level. Calls him up on April 10th, 36 major league plate appearances, 2-for-34 with 2 singles, 2 walks, 18 strikeouts, gets sent back down on April 26th. Now, I think Holliday is going to be just fine. But what you don't want with James Wood is what happened with Jackson Holliday. That's not good. That's not good for anyone. It doesn't make anyone feel good. You want Wood, when he's called up, to stay up. Davey said it on Wednesday afternoon. We don't want to bring Wood up and platoon him, okay? Like, we want to bring him up and have him be a guy, a piece, a stud. And I think that he will be, but we're not at that point just yet. This installment of the Nats Chat podcast brought to us by Walter's Sports Bar, located across the street from Nationals Park. Visit waltersdc.com for more information. So the Nats have this off day on Thursday. Next up for them as they continue their tour of the American League. 3-game series at the Boston Red Sox. Game 1 Friday night, 7:10. Patrick Corbin will be the Nats starting pitcher. Game 2 Saturday afternoon, 4:10. Jake Irvin will be the Nats starting pitcher. And Game 3 Sunday afternoon at 1:35. Mackenzie Gore will be the Nats starting pitcher, and we'll see if the Nats can keep this up. A lot of good vibes right now with the Nats. This is, I think, the best like general feeling that we've had with the Nats in quite some time.
Yeah, and what's amazing is you can nitpick and look at individuals and say, well, this guy's not hitting, this guy's not doing this or that, and yet they're still playing well and being competitive and giving everyone reason for optimism, and it does kind of suggest that there could be better things still to come. That they're not necessarily playing at their very best right now, and they're still finding a way to win games and be very competitive. They easily could have won this game, as we said. You just get one more clutch hit at some point. I'm really fascinated to see this. The season has not really gone the way I thought it would. I thought they would get off to a slow start, and I thought over the second half of the year, as the kids started to come up, that's when they would take off and get a little better. And maybe that will still happen, and they will be even better in the second half than they are in the first half. But so far, the first half has been pretty entertaining. And again, if you were in the ballpark either of these two nights, and you don't come out of this optimistic about the state of the Nationals, I don't know what to tell you. I know there are things you can nitpick. I know you can be frustrated they lost this game. But man, in the bigger picture, take a step back and tell yourself, look how far they have come. Look how they are competing with everyone that they're playing right now. And there is every reason to think it's going to get better from here.
And they're doing this without their best starting pitcher from last season, Josiah Gray, without arguably their best batter from last season, and Lane Thomas. Hit us up on X at @Nats_chat. You can email the show, natschatpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on YouTube. Just search Nats Chat. Our YouTube handle is @NatsChatPodcast. We have a website that we invite you to check out as well, natschatpodcast.com. All Nationals radio highlights on Nats Chat are courtesy of 106.7 The Fan. For Mark Zuckerman, I'm Al Galdi. We thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on the Nats Chat Podcast.
The pitch. Smashed out to center field. Going back is Greg Allen, still looking up, still looking back, jumping up. And it is a home run. James Wood. A 2-run shot as Allen just could not reach it at the top of the wall. It bounces up and over the wall pad. And James Wood smacks his 3rd home run of the season, a 2-0 advantage for Rochester.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.